Welcome to the podcast, Find Your Sustainability, where we discuss complex sustainability issues with experts from a variety of perspectives. Today, I would like to welcome Jamie Parson, Chief Diversity Officer here at Appalachian State University. Jamie was an associate professor in the Department of Finance, Banking, and Insurance at App State, where she taught undergraduate courses in business, law, and insurance. In addition, she led the Walker College of Business Inclusive Excellence Team, formerly Diversity Advisory Team, as well as the Risk Management and Insurance Diversity Initiatives in the Brantley Risk and Insurance Center. She also serves on numerous boards and committees, including the university's Diversity and Inclusion Accountability Team. Jamie, welcome to our podcast.
Thank you.
Can you tell me a little bit about what led you to the role of Chief Diversity Officer?
Yeah, so I think much of my diversity and inclusion work started when I was younger. I was in the youth NAACP when I was in high school, and when I got to college, I was one of 7% underrepresented students in my undergraduate institution, and being a part of a multicultural student organization was really important to building community. So I was a part of a group called the Meeting of Students Addressing Intercultural Concerns. And then when I went to law school, I became involved in our Black Law Student Association and our Multicultural Law Student Association. And I think being involved in those programs when I was in college really led me to find a lot of value in those in my career. So when I went to working at State Farm, I had the opportunity to participate in employee resource groups, which I found were really valuable. Before I went back to State Farm, I was also a Title VII investigator. And then when I got to this position here at Appalachian, being able to do diversity and inclusion work just seemed like a natural fit for continuing in my career.
Yeah, like me, when I was young, the chief sustainability officer wasn't a thing. Mm-hmm. And I don't think chief diversity officers were a thing. We just kind of fell into these roles.
Absolutely.
Well, you certainly deserve it. You have a lot of experience, and it's always been great working with you.
Thanks.
Can you expand on your experience teaching and working in the Walker College of Business?
Yeah, so I was hired to teach primarily the Legal Environment of Business course, which is an introduction course to law for all business majors. Had the opportunity to then start working in teaching some of the insurance courses. So I taught a personal insurance course and then had the opportunity to participate in the rollout of the employee benefits minor, which is the first employee benefits minor in the entire nation. So getting the opportunity to teach in the College of Business, it's a lot about innovation and what kind of creative, practical things you can bring to the classroom, which is a model I really like because I see such value in bringing those practical experiences to students rather than, you know, spending a lot of time talking about high level theories and things that they can't necessarily relate to, thinking about how we take some of those theories and put them into practice.
Are you seeing students in the College of Business really valuing the employee experience, just the people part of the business community?
Absolutely. I think that hands-on experience gives them the opportunity to see the real life implications of the work that they're doing. So in the insurance space, they get to see how businesses use insurance and how they benefit from insurance. And they get to see the real life response that happens when a crisis happens and they need to call on their insurance company to come to, provide coverage. And I think getting the opportunity to see that in all the different stages of that process is really important for them understanding why they're taking the classes that they're taking.
How does your previous and or current research connect to your DEI work?
I don't think it's a direct line. My research is primarily in insurance regulation, so not really a direct connection to diversity, equity, and inclusion work. But I think the connection to policy, law, navigating political atmospheres, to bring people together is where my work and research really aligns with diversity, equity, and inclusion. Most recently, I've had the opportunity to bring some of my colleagues together to write a paper on gender identity in auto insurance. And so that's been an exciting opportunity and it's an exciting chance for me to pull all of my worlds together.
Well, certainly understanding policy and politics helps you in your current role.
Absolutely.
You helped with the passing of the North Carolina Foster Care Family Act in July of 2015. Can you tell us a little more about how you became involved with that process?
So before I came to Appalachian, I was a foster parent for a couple of years. And when I came to Appalachian, the department chair, Dr. David Marlette, was also serving as a foster parent. And like many insurance experts, starts to take a deep dive into whether or not he has insurance coverage for different scenarios and hypothetical situations. And he realized that there was a gap in the homeowner's policy that if I'm an insured and my kids are considered insured, so would my foster children be considered insureds. And in a homeowner's policy, insureds can't sue each other in a liability coverage. And so if a foster child's biological parent was disgruntled with the foster parent or the foster child got injured on the property, there wouldn't be any insurance coverage for any lawsuits that came to the foster family by the foster children's parents. And so that gap in coverage really left an exposure for maybe more affluent potential foster parents who might be able to provide really great experiences for foster children who might not be interested in getting into foster care because of that exposure. So we saw this as a really important opportunity to get involved in some of the conversations that were starting. Senator Berenger, who's now a judge, was also a foster parent, and she, along with some other folks, sponsored a bill to figure out how we could support foster families, but also thinking about foster children. There was also a gap for foster children in getting coverage for car insurance, because if you can imagine, as a foster parent, as a parent, I barely want to insure my own children because my insurance goes up so much. And as a foster family, whether or not that's cost prohibitive, if you've got three or four teenagers living in your home, you wouldn't be able to necessarily insure them. And so then they age out of the system without having any experience driving.
So you're definitely focusing on just eliminating the risk, both of the foster child and the caregivers.
Yeah, and I think it's not so much eliminating the risk, but providing some coverage in spaces where we didn't traditionally have coverage for these types of scenarios, and thinking about how we can create a better and more equitable pathway for children aging out of the system that don't necessarily have access to car insurance from their parents' car insurance. Because otherwise, you know, when a 16-year-old starts driving, the reason their premiums are so high is because they're an inexperienced driver. When they get to be 18 and age out of foster care, if they got their license at 18, they'd still be paying that same high premium because they wouldn't have any years of experience.
Sorry, I'm just reflecting on my son's premiums and why they're so high. He didn't start driving until he was 18.
Yeah, my daughter started driving when she was 16, and I think we drive older cars, and it was still a very significant increase. And so I can't imagine trying to insure multiple teenagers at one time, let alone multiple teenagers that I don't always have 24/7 visual on because they maybe go for visits with their family. And just that increased exposure. And some foster children, you know, bounce from house to house, so they don't necessarily have a consistent home to even establish and build a relationship enough with those foster families to say, hey, can I get a car? Can I get insurance and a license?
Well, it doesn't surprise me at all that you're a foster parent. You're very kind, very generous. What was that experience like?
It was humbling, I think. You know, when you see the experiences that some of the children in foster care have had, and some of the, well, you know, how I would describe resilience in their lives to be able to persevere through some of that. One of the children that I had ended up graduating high school early once she came to my house and started college classes at the age of 17. So, you know, to see some of these children go through the life experiences they had and still push through and try and do the things that, you know, we expect our quote unquote normal kids to go through and do, you know, graduate high school, go to college, get a job, is pretty amazing.
Well, that's very generous of you to take that on. A lot of people, I'm sure, just can't even imagine doing that. Well, let's talk about sustainability and business for good a little bit. Sustainability and DEI work are interrelated, and it's known that sustainable solutions need to strongly value people and places in addition to making a strong business case. However, the business case for sustainability, it often precedes conversations about how people and places are influenced. So what are your thoughts on how to ensure that we lead with people in mind as a priority?
I think you really have to have someone charged with that in their role. If it's not specific to someone's role, and I mean a leader, like a corporate leader's role, an executive leader's role, if it's not on their radar and in their job description, there's nobody being held accountable to making sure that people are first and foremost in the organization. I think secondly, what I hear a lot about is the need for holistic wellness and support of the entire employee, thinking about mental health, financial wellness, and just general health management, I think is really important to demonstrating how we lead people by providing them the resources they need to be healthy and productive employees.
So here at Appalachian State, it's a pretty large business, and we have a chief sustainability officer in you, and you report directly to the chancellor. What do you think that says about how this institution values diversity, equity, inclusion?
What I know is that not every university has their chief diversity officer or that person that's typically like a chief diversity officer reporting to their chancellor. So to me, that speaks volumes to the type of commitment we have here at Appalachian for the work of diversity, equity, and inclusion.
What are some of your big, hairy, audacious goals for diversity here at App State?
I would say there are a couple. And I think first and foremost, going back to the people portion, we really need to be able to create an environment that is welcoming to all people and one where people feel safe and comfortable to engage in difficult dialogues and feel like they have the skill set to do that. I don't think we'll always agree on everything, but I think it's really important for us as a higher education institution to make sure that we're providing those types of environments where people can explore their thoughts and grow in their thoughts and develop their thoughts, because otherwise we're not really doing our job as an institution.
What are some of the biggest challenges or obstacles to our DEI work here on campus?
I think we have about three big challenges right now. First is communication. We're dealing in a space that's in person and virtual and figuring out the best means of communication with students, faculty, and staff, and some of our community partners. Secondly, I think crisis management is another issue that we are facing as a challenge because there are so many different obstacles with the pandemic and navigating masks, vaccines, social justice movement, deciding what to respond to, when to respond to it, and how to respond to it, I think is a growing challenge for all of us as we try and navigate this new space that we're living in. Third, I think infrastructure is a challenge. We have this chief diversity officer role, and we have a lot of other areas of diversity, equity, and inclusion, and trying to figure out how all those pieces really work together. We try to model after other universities, but at the end of the day, we really need to figure out what works for our campus. And that's a growing challenge as more and more people try and get into the work of diversity, equity, and inclusion, which is really exciting. But it also brings about the challenge, okay, where does this new initiative fit into the grander picture of what we're trying to do?
In the case of faculty and staff retention, what can we do to help ensure our diversity goals are met in a way that deeply supports our BIPOC colleagues?
I think taking the search process seriously and playing an active role in the search process, thinking about how we do everything from the job description to the interview process, and thinking through every line of that work and saying, is this a skill set that we need, or do we just have that on there because we traditionally have had it on there? What barriers do we create by continuing to have that particular job descriptor on there? And asking questions in the search process, challenging each other around our biases. I think beyond the search process, reaching out to the colleagues that you have that you know are from marginalized backgrounds or maybe have invisible identities that you know of that are struggling to find community, struggling in their teaching research service or in their job, and really being an active supporter of helping them find community.
You've been spending a lot of your time training campus units about diversity, equity, and inclusion. Can you elaborate on that?
So most of the training that I've been working on spends some time talking about diversity, equity, and inclusion vocabulary, some of the traditional terms that we've worked with, diversity, equity, inclusion, as well as newer language such as anti-racism, microaggressions, bias, identity, and what all those things mean for us as a campus. and thinking about different scenarios and how we can move from just knowing the information to acting and responding when we run across situations where someone is using language that presents as bias or is speaking in a way that comes off as a micro invalidation, how we can interrupt those scenarios and maintain relationship in the process. And interrupting in a way that it's still educational, because we're still an educational institution. So thinking about faculty and student communication, student to student communication, and staff to staff communication, how those conversations are different based on who you're talking to.
So the work that you do is really difficult. I know it's sometimes controversial. You find yourself in the middle of conflict. Not everyone is aligned with their values. Everyone has different experiences. So despite all of that, what is giving you hope these days?
I think watching the younger generations of students who are in high school now, who are going to be coming to college. My daughter is getting ready to go into college, and I have watched her grow, and I have a lot of hope for the generations coming after, that they're going to continue the work that's been started and that's really been pushed the last year. And I have a lot of hope for their ability to get things done and to make real systemic change for our campus community as well as our national community.
Jamie, thank you so much for being on the show today. If people wanted to learn more about your work and diversity at App State, where should we send them?
I think they should visit the website diversity.appstate.edu to keep up to date on what's going on our campus. I would also encourage everyone to follow the monthly messages that my office puts out regarding different initiatives that we're leading and different events on campus that are taking place and some of the strategic direction we may be going.
Well, thank you so much and have a great rest of your day.
You too.
Find Your Sustainability is a production of the University Communications Department at Appalachian State. It's hosted by Appalachian's Chief Sustainability Officer, Lee Ball. For more information about Appalachian State sustainability, check out sustain.appstate.edu. For more podcasts, videos, and articles related to Appalachian State, check out today.appstate.edu.